President-elect Joe Biden has vowed to make climate change a priority and get the U.S. back in the Paris Climate Accord on day one of his administration. President Trump, in the waning days of his presidency, has installed officials skeptical of climate change in top science positions. Meanwhile, it's been a year of catastrophic wildfires and hurricanes. According to NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, the first 9 months of 2020 brought a record-tying $16 billion worth of weather disasters to the U.S. Well, we thought perfect time to convene another Climate Change Reporter Roundtable, people on this beat from across the country. Today, Tegan Wendland, an energy and environment reporter for WWNO in New Orleans. Tegan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Sam Brash is a climate reporter for Colorado Public Radio in Denver. Hi, Sam.
Glad to be here.
And rounding out our group today, Umair Irfan, who covers climate change, energy, and the environment for Vox. He's in Washington, D.C. Umair, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
Tegan, I'm going to start with you. Louisiana still recovering after back-to-back major hurricanes. You say thousands of people remain displaced. Has that at all affected how people view climate change? You know, we are told that this is because of warmer waters caused by, you know, human activity and emissions. Are you seeing more people kind of embracing that and more concerned about climate change?
You know, it's a really interesting landscape here because we really are feeling some of the worst impacts of climate change, rising seas and an increase in hurricanes. We had 5 named storms hit the state this year. 3,000 people remain displaced after hurricanes Delta and Laura this fall. And yet the state continues to rely heavily on oil and gas and largely votes for Republican lawmakers who don't embrace climate change agendas. So, you know, unsurprisingly, the state voted again for President Trump by a landslide and reelected Senator Bill Cassidy, who's criticized Biden's comments on transitioning to clean energy in TV ads. Yet our Democratic governor, John Bel Edwards, just formed this climate task force made up of scientists and advocates to work towards carbon neutrality by 2050. And the state has one of the most aggressive climate mitigation plans in the nation and its coastal master plan to restore the coast. So Louisiana is just really a land of contradictions.
Right. Well, probably a sharper view of the whole country, you know, a land of contradictions. And what is something that you want to focus more on going into 2021?
I think, you know, really digging into the irony of the fact that most of our coastal restoration efforts are funded by the oil and gas industry, both through the BP oil spill settlement fund and a portion of the sale of offshore leases. That's the way it's set up right now. So we, you know, can have some very ambitious climate mitigation plans in place, but they're reliant on the continued success of the oil and gas industry.
Right. And people there are just reliant on the jobs. So is there some sensitivity to that, some sense of how do we help people transition, you know, people transition away from an industry that's they're living?
For sure. There's a lot of talk of transitioning to green energy jobs and to jobs in coastal restoration, but that has largely been talk. There's not a lot of concerted effort to retrain people in those specific areas. And we're seeing sort of this unmitigated retreat away from the coast. With every damaging storm, we see people move north to higher ground, and the folks who are left behind are lower income people who can't necessarily afford to make those moves on their own. So, you know, there's really a need for federal funding to help with a managed retreat away from these low-lying, dangerous areas.
Yeah. Sam Brash there in Denver, Colorado. Much of your recent reporting has been on the late season wildfires there. Usually the season's finished by October, but this year you saw some of the worst at a time when you say people were getting ready to ski. So what have you been focusing on in terms of your climate reporting there in Colorado?
I mean, a lot of what we've had to worry about is just picking up the pieces here from what we saw last month. I mean, it was truly catastrophic. This year, we saw a couple fires break the record for the first and second largest wildfires in Colorado history. And all of that really does track back to climate change. I mean, climate change is causing droughts, and that all adds up to a longer, hotter wildfire season, and that's what we're seeing. So one thing we're thinking a lot about is, like, what kind of mitigation work does need to happen here on the ground in Colorado? What does it look like, and how does it look different from place to place?
That sounds like what you'll be looking at going into 2021. Anything else?
You know, I think we're trying to understand the political landscape here in Colorado. I mean, Tegan talked about what's going on in Louisiana. I mean, I think the political shift here in Colorado is truly remarkable. We don't have a Republican left in statewide political office. Both chambers of our legislature are controlled by Democrats. Biden won big here in Colorado, and I think it's clear that, you know, climate was one of the things that was driving people to the polls. It's kind of curious how it shook out a little bit. The new senator from Colorado is John Hickenlooper, who doesn't have the best reputation among environmental advocates here because of some of the things he did around fracking as governor. But it's a big shift towards Democrats, and it seems like climate is a winning issue from that.
Interesting. Well, speaking of politics, let's bring in Umer Irfan, who's with Vox. And you're looking at this on a national scale. You're going to be busy following how these local impacts are addressed by the Biden administration. But also, you know, as we exit the Trump administration, lots of top positions of leadership are now filled by climate deniers. So just what are you looking at?
Right. One of the things that we're trying to pay attention to is personnel, because personnel is policy. And as you noted, yes, on the way out the door, the Trump administration is trying to move a lot of their political appointments into career positions so that they'll remain behind after they leave office. And one of the critical things that they're trying to aim at is this report called the National Climate Assessment. And this is a report that's mandated by Congress, and the federal government has to put it together to assess all the risks of climate change that are affecting the country. And then the government has to plan around this. And so the idea is, if you can get a lot of people that are more aligned with the Trump administration's view on climate change, basically that it's not a big issue, they'll have a weaker report come out that will require the government to do less. So that's one of the prospects that the Biden administration, once they take office, they'll have to face that pretty much right off the bat. The other big thing is that, you know, Mitch McConnell and the congressional Republicans have already said that they're trying to stifle Biden from filling his administration with the people he wants. And so trying to get his team on board is going to be the very first challenge he's going to face.
Yeah. So definitely personnel. What else are you watching? Just tell us briefly.
Yes. And so without Congress, I mean, Joe Biden has put out a list of executive actions that he wants to take, things like limiting methane emissions from public lands and also using the federal government's procurement system. You know, the federal government is massive and they buy a lot of stuff. And so if they can ensure the federal government buys clean energy, clean vehicles and so forth, they think they can move the market. And so he wants to be able to do everything that's within his purview to shift towards cleaner energy. And one thing that he is also aiming to do is also collaborate with state and local governments, like you know, governments in Louisiana and in Colorado, because while Congress may not be on board, a lot of state and local officials do realize that climate change is a problem, and they've built a coalition over the last 4 years to try to address it.
Well, this is, of course, why there's so many eyes on the runoff in Georgia with two Senate seats up for grabs there. I just want to, in the just a little time that we have, I want to ask each of you if you have a question for another. Tegan, I hate to put you on that spot first, but go.
So, Sam, winter snow is finally snuffing out the record-breaking wildfires there in your state. And I imagine people are now taking stock of the damage. So who's going to be able to rebuild, and are there policies to ensure that they do so safely?
That's a really good question. I think it's something that we're trying to figure out right now. There were a few hundred structures that it looks like were destroyed in this latest group of October fires. Whether all those buildings are insured, whether they're first homes, second homes, who's able to rebuild, who's not, whether, you know, continued or planned developments are going to go forward in this wildland urban interface, that's something we really need to look into and dig into and figure out. You know, one of the things that you have to do if fires are just part of the landscape is build around it, prepare for it. And you have to build homes in a different way. It might mean you don't get to build homes, period. And so the short answer is I don't know, but it's something we're trying to find out more about.
It's certainly okay. Something we're grappling with here, too, in terms of who can live where and how we make sure that people aren't living in unsafe and vulnerable places. And I guess I just think of relocation as the ultimate human adaptation.
Umer, you've got a question now.
Yeah, for Tegan, I mean, you did talk about, you know, the climate change refugees. And I recall during the presidential campaign last year, you know, the Democrats, they had this big climate change town hall, and they had people from Ile de Jean Charles talking about, you know, having to relocate. And I'm wondering, is there sort of a political groundswell in Louisiana among these people that are being facing the consequences of climate change? And how is that affecting the political picture in the state?
There's certainly some organizing within these communities advocating for themselves. But I think we're also seeing at the federal level, even though NFIP, the National Flood Insurance Program, hasn't necessarily embraced policies that will fund relocation, HUD and FEMA are creating huge multi-billion dollar programs to pay for these things because it's inevitable that this is going to continue to happen across the country. So we got nearly $50 million to relocate the people of this tiny little disappearing island of Île-de-Jean-Charles, and that the process is taking a very long time. It's very challenging, a lot more complicated than we maybe anticipated. But, you know, perhaps we'll create a model for communities across the country in years to come.
Yeah, and COVID didn't help. That's Tegan Wendland, energy and environment reporter for WWNO in New Orleans. We also heard from Sam Brash, climate reporter for Colorado Public Radio in Denver, and Umer Irfan, a climate, energy, and environment reporter for Vox in Washington, D.C. You guys, I mean, when we first did this, we had to scrounge around to try to find climate reporters. And now, you know, you're a growing group, and we so appreciate your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.